This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It is Tuesday today. Because today will be the last day I am at work for this week. It is Thanksgiving, or soon to be Thanksgiving. And we have a lot of activities planned. We are actually having our Thanksgiving a day early this year. My brother-in-law, my sister's brother, they have come up from Lawton, Oklahoma. They're going to be spending Thanksgiving with us. I believe he is shipping out for Iraq in a few days, few weeks. It's soon. It's soon now. And with Lynette's mom and dad living up here, they made the trek to come all the way up, brought their two boys with them, and one of them actually works for Lowe's. And of course, they're going to have their big Friday sale where they don't want anybody gone. So we're having Thanksgiving on Wednesday so they can travel back on Thursday so he can be back there on Friday. We are also having a little get-together out at the house tonight for my mom and dad. Today is their 60th wedding anniversary, so that should be fun. It's actually kind of a surprise 60th wedding anniversary. What will be fun about this is they don't actually know. And I got a call from my mom today, and she said, "Philip, your father wanted me to call, and he wants me to tell you that we don't really see like any need for us to come out tonight. You just have fun." I'm like, no, you are coming. And so I had to talk my dad into it. Actually, I basically just had to tell my dad he was coming. But anyways, we got that all worked out. It was fine. Hate to sound like a broken record, but I am on day one of the no complaints, complaint-free world thing. Actually, I did pretty good on and off this last week. Well, the last 5 days. But I was really tired yesterday. I mean, we've been pushing at work, and I've been trying to push and get some things done. And I've been trying to get everything taken care of for whatever I need to do in terms of the thing tonight, and they're just with all of that. I thought yesterday, you know, I don't think I've complained about something, but the way I've been feeling all day, I probably did. I should just start over. So I'm on day one again, which is just fine. All in all, though, everything is really going very well. I actually got a chance to get linked up with my brother, who lives out in California, on video Skype last night. We talked for about a half an hour. We hadn't talked for a while, and got that set up. Going to do that for my mom and dad tonight. It should be fun. Anyways, last week I had mentioned that I had a topic in queue for last week, and then it got bumped. It was an episode on Frontline, and pretty much from the opening line of that Frontline episode, I knew that I was going to do an episode on this information, because the very first thing that came up was the announcer saying, "Tonight on Frontline, long before the economic meltdown, the story of one woman who tried to warn about the threat to the financial system." And I thought, yeah, okay, we're going to do this one. And the reason that I thought that, for those of you who have read Still Whispers, is there's a chapter in the Still Whispers called God on Trial. And it notes the fact that we are very good at humans about beating the drum when any kind of catastrophe comes along and starting our little chant, "Why didn't God do this? Why didn't God do that? If he was a God of love, why isn't he taking care of us? Why didn't he help us out? Why didn't he blah, 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 blah?" But I said, we're not so good about beating our drums when 6 months later or a year later, the articles start coming out that all begin with the title, "Could It Have Been Prevented?" Whatever it is. And what you find in reading those articles is that the answer is yes, it could have been prevented. Oftentimes, there are people who have their hand raised, some of them whom are shouting, trying to get someone to pay attention to them, and no one will pay attention to them. And what they're saying is going to happen is exactly what happens. So when Frontline starts it off and says the story of one woman who was trying to sound the alarm and no one would listen to her years before the financial crisis of 2008, of course, my ears perk up and go, oh, I want to hear about this. And in fact, the episode was called The Warning. And you can go to Frontline and look up The Warning on the web and get a transcript of it and read through it. It's really fascinating. I obviously am not going to rehearse the whole thing here because I'm driving and I can't do it anyways. But I will try at least to hit the high points and hopefully do it justice. One of the opening scenes in the episode is a congressional hearing where a congressman says something to the effect, just what are you trying to protect here? And the woman, who is trying to sound the alarm, looks back, very calm, cool, and collected, and says, in essence, I am trying to protect the money of the American people. Now then, having that background, let's then back up and see if we can kind of figure out what's going on and who the players are in this little play. First of all, you start with Alan Greenspan, who is the head of the Federal Reserve. He has been the head of the Federal Reserve for quite some time. And before it's all said and done, he will be the head of the Federal Reserve for, I believe, 18 years. Alan Greenspan is a very interesting candidate to be the head of the Federal Reserve. And here's why. He is actually a disciple of a woman named Ayn Rand. Now, for some of you, that name may be familiar. For others of you, it might not. Ayn Rand wrote some books called The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged. And Ayn Rand is a libertarianism. She believes in absolutely free markets, or I guess believed at this point, in absolutely free markets. No regulation, zero zip, nothing. Laissez-faire, complete. That government should get out of economic affairs. Leave the economy alone. Greenspan was a disciple. One of her disciples, which basically meant that he didn't believe that government should be involved in the economy. And here is a man who has been elected to the chairman of the Federal Reserve. He, in essence, is the chief governmental banker who is regulating the economy of the United States of America by way of the Federal Reserve. And he had commented several times how this irony was not lost on him. That he, when he was sworn in, actually had to swear to uphold certain laws that he didn't necessarily agree with. Now, I should say that for most of Alan Greenspan's run, everything worked great with this philosophy. It really did. There was a lot of growth. It was very stable growth. Everything seemed to be fine. Okay, it's not like he was a disaster the whole time that he was in. Everything really was pretty good. And because everything was pretty good, and because no one seemed to understand it as well as Alan Greenspan did, and frankly, no one seemed to understand a lot of the things that he said, everyone was very content to just say, well, okay, we'll just sit in the corner over here and we'll just let him do his thing. Now, his philosophy makes a whole lot of sense when you're looking at Republican presidents, because Republican presidents typically lean towards a more free market system. Let the markets do what they want. Don't have a lot of regulation. That was definitely in line with what Alan Greenspan believed. What's interesting is that when Bill Clinton became president, he actually kept Alan Greenspan on, probably in large part because everything was working. And if it's working, you don't break it and you don't try to fix it. So they kept Alan Greenspan on. So you have Alan Greenspan, and he also has around him several people who are very much in lockstep with the way he views things. Robert Rubin becomes the Secretary of the Treasury. You have Timothy Geithner, who is Rubin's top deputy. And you have a Harvard economist named Larry Summers. These guys are all together, and they're all very much in this idea of markets should be free. And that's the way they're going to approach it, even during the Clinton administration. Okay, so you've got those players over on one side. And then in 1996, a woman is appointed to an obscure little agency called the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. This woman's name is Brooksley Bourne. I have never met her, but just reading her bio, I can tell you right now, I have an immense amount of respect for this woman. This woman came up through the 60s, went to Stanford University when not a whole lot of women were going to Stanford University. If I've got my facts correct, she was president of her senior class at Stanford University, the first female president of her senior class at Stanford University. Obviously, a very intelligent, very disciplined, very dedicated person who all her life had had to push against what we call the old boy network, had to push against the expectations of people that she was less than what she was. In fact, the story is told in Frontline that when she was elected as president of the senior class, some of the faculty actually called her and said, "Now we understand, you know, it's a great honor and we're really happy to see this happen, but if it just gets to be too much for you, let us know and we'll step in and we'll help you." Because they were really afraid that she was just going to fall down because she was a woman. And I get the impression from the episode, she basically just smiled and went on her way. This is the environment she is used to operating in. She moves out of Stanford, she becomes a high-powered lawyer, she's working in Washington, she is used to drafting complex financial instruments. She works in financial instruments as part of her work. She does this for 20 years. In her circles, she meets Hillary Clinton. When President Clinton is looking around for an attorney general, she is actually interviewed by President Bill Clinton, probably on the advice of his wife. Bill Clinton, according to the episode, does not find her very interesting. So he doesn't appoint her, he appoints Janet Reno. However, apparently, as kind of a consolation prize, she gets put in charge of this commission, this Commodity Futures Trading Commission. And one of the things that this little tiny commission oversees is over-the-counter derivatives. Now, I am not an economics person. I am not a high-powered lawyer. I don't know exactly what these things are. But as near as I can tell, what's happening in these over-the-counter derivatives is you have one company who wishes to insure their risk in some way for something they're doing. And they want to say, "I don't want to take all the risk for this. And if things start going south in this particular venture, I want somebody to come in beside me and help me." And so they have their lawyers draft up this derivative between them and another company. And it's a way of kind of ensuring that if something goes bad, that this other company will come in and pick up some of the cost. And for that, Company A pays some sort of fee to Company B. From what I understand from the episode, Brooksley Bourne actually had written these things. She understood them. And as she began to kind of look around, she and do some estimates, she realized that, according to their estimates, this was like a 27 trillion, with a T, trillion dollar market. And it was completely dark. There was no regulations on needing any sort of disclosure for what was happening. And the only people that knew what was happening between any given two companies were the lawyers who had drafted these things and stuck them in their file cabinets. And every other company that was involved with one of those companies that had done the derivatives certainly didn't know what other derivatives those companies were doing. And Brooksley Bourne looked at all of this and she said, from her base of experience, this seems rife for fraud. Well, I should take you back to another interesting anecdote because it becomes important later. When she has her first meeting with Alan Greenspan, purportedly what happened, and she decided not to comment about this on camera, and so this information actually comes from her aides and some other sources. According to Frontline, in the initial meeting that she had with Alan Greenspan, he looked across the table and said, in essence, we have far different views about markets. And she said, in what way? And he said, for instance, I suppose you think that we should be prosecuting fraud. And she said, yes. And he said, well, I don't. I think the market will take care of itself. And in fact, if you look back over Alan Greenspan's time in the Federal Reserve and his influence over others who had those capabilities, the idea was hands off the market. Yes, the laws are there that we're supposed to regulate, but I guess the laws don't say how much we're supposed to regulate. So we won't regulate that much and we'll just let things go. Brooksley Bourne, on the other hand, looked at this and said, you know, this seems like an area that would easily lend itself to fraud. And in fact, there was a case, a documented case of it. There was a major scandal at a bank called Bankers Trust, where they basically, according to the episode, built Procter & Gamble and Gibson greeting cards out of a lot of money. And they had communications between the lawyers saying, yeah, we really took those guys because they don't have any idea what these derivatives are. And she's contemplating regulating these derivatives. And her philosophy is, she didn't understand why everyone was totally opposed to any regulation or any disclosure of these derivatives. She said, that puzzled me. You know, what in the world was in this market that had to be hidden? Why did it have to be a completely dark market? It made me very suspicious and troubled. Okay, so she decides, this falls within my purview. I think I'll start the process in motion. So she starts putting out feelers that she's going to start requiring some disclosure for these over-the-counter derivatives. And Greenspan and Rubin and all those guys, they bring the heat. I mean, they come down on her and basically tell her that she is going to destroy the economy of the United States if she keeps pursuing this path. And they tell her, among other things, you don't have the right to do this. And she looks right back at them and she said, you know, that's very funny because all of my lawyers over at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission say that I do. And she doesn't back down because they can't tell her to stop it. So the next thing she does, she floats this proposal. this working paper on it. Whoa, at this point, oh, Greenspan and all these people there are freaking out. So they actually get a congressional hearing together. And it's the congressional hearing that the quote comes at the beginning of the episode, where the senator says, just what are you trying to protect? And she says, I am trying to protect the money of the American people. Well, the short of it is that they shut her down. They tell her, this isn't necessary. Congress tells her, you don't need to regulate this. Stop it. Take your hands off. 6 weeks after she finished, after they get done with these hearings, there's this large hedge fund. One moment, I'm getting my mail. Ooh, lots of mail today. There's this large hedge fund that starts going south. I mean, this is a hedge fund that is made up by a bunch of really smart guys. And through the use of derivatives, they have managed to take $5 billion and leverage it up to $1 trillion. The banks are heavily invested in it. Everybody's insuring everybody else. No one has any idea how much anybody's into for anybody else. And the Russian economy starts tanking, and this hedge fund starts hemorrhaging. And everybody starts getting spooked. Credit markets start tightening up. People are losing sleep. They don't. It all comes to head one weekend in 1998 when finally the federal government does not step in, but I believe Secretary Rubin convinces some of the banks that are involved, maybe all the banks that are involved, that they each need to pony up hundreds of millions of dollars. I'm backing into my garage. I'm going to have to wrap up this quick because I have things to do. So they pony up hundreds of millions of dollars, and they manage to buy out this hedge fund, get it solvent, and then close the thing down before it takes down the American economy. And Brooksley Bourne says, this is precisely the thing I was worried about. Okay, so it all gets cleaned up. They have some hearings in Congress. What was this? What happened? Blah, 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 blah. They all conclude, that's really just an anomaly. It's a glitch. No big deal. We can just go on. So they just go on like nothing happened. That's 1998. The over-the-counter derivative market just keeps puttering along. By 2007, the over-the-counter derivative market has grown to $595 trillion, with a T, trillion dollars. Now, you know, the bailout, that was like a couple of trillion, just $2 trillion. The over-the-counter derivative market by 2007 had grown to $595 trillion. And almost exactly 10 years later, after those hearings and after the crisis with the hedge fund, comes the financial crisis of 2008. The people who knew what to look for saw it coming 10 years ahead of time. And Brooksley Bourne says, it was my worst nightmare coming true. Nobody really knew what was going on in the market. The toxic assets of many of our biggest banks are over-the-counter derivatives and caused the economic downturn that made us lose our savings, lose our jobs, lose our homes. It was very frightening. Now then, somebody out there is going to say, well, yeah, you know, anytime there's a problem, you just look around and there'll be somebody who was predicting it. That doesn't mean they actually predicted it. It just means they got lucky. Which is true. There are a lot of voices all the time screaming about something. And sooner or later, when something goes wrong, somebody can say, see, I predicted that. But except, there are some general principles in life. And if you follow those general principles, which are based on really good reasons, you can predict things. For instance, there is a general principle that says community is better than isolation. Listen to what Brooksley Bourne had said about the derivatives market and about regulating it, or at least disclosing it. They were totally opposed to it. That puzzled me. You know, what was it that was in this market that had to be hidden? Why did they have to be isolated, in other words? Why did it have to be completely dark? This made me very suspicious and troubled, because community is better than isolation. And there's a reason that community is better than isolation, and it gets back then to our real closing point. What was very interesting all of this came down after it was all over, after all the devastation to the savings and to the housing markets and everything. There were congressional hearings, and there was a fascinating exchange between Henry Waxman and Alan Greenspan. And I'll just read it for you, and then I'll tell you what I conclude from this. Henry Waxman: "You've been a staunch advocate of letting markets regulate themselves, and my question for you is simple. Were you wrong?" Greenspan: "Yes, I found a flaw, but I've been very distressed by that fact." Waxman: "You found a flaw in the reality." Greenspan: "Flaw in the model that I perceived is the critical functioning structure that defines how the world works, so to speak. In other words, you found that your view of the world, your ideology, was not right." Precisely. "No, that was precisely the reason I was shocked, because I've been going for 40 years or more with very considerable evidence that it was working exceptionally well." Okay, here's the deal. Alan Greenspan, 2 decades in public service, honored public service, and he's working through with a very basic philosophy, and that is that markets can regulate themselves. But see, what's underneath that? What's underneath all of that is this idea that somehow markets that are made up of human beings, when you get enough human beings together, they'll eventually do the right thing. And that's not my philosophy at all. Because you see, if you don't recognize that not only are humans smart and they have the spark of God and they have much to commend them, but they also have a destructive component in their nature, and they will do things that are inherently destructive and will spread destruction through as many people as possible. If you don't recognize that, you come up with this Pollyanna view that, well, if we get a bunch of smart guys together, then everything will be okay, and the market will just correct itself. And the market technically does correct itself. You just have things like the Great Depression. So if you want to have Great Depressions every once in a while, you can just completely let the markets go all by themselves, understanding that there will be this destructive side of human nature that will eventually come to the forefront and will cause a massive meltdown of some such. And the derivatives were precisely that. Now, it wasn't only the derivatives in 2008. It was also people buying houses they couldn't afford and lenders giving money to people who didn't have any way of paying them back just because they wanted to make their fees. There was enough destruction to spread all over this thing. But the fact is what it comes down to at the bottom line is that if you don't recognize that humans not only have this wondrous, amazing side to them of creativity and intelligence, but they also have this destructive side to them, you are going to construct a system that no matter how good it looks, for many, many years, the reckoning is coming. Because that destructive component inside the collection of humans will figure out some way to cause a meltdown. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home. Of course, you must be, might be wondering, yeah, so, well, you know, this is the world we live in. This is it. We got a bunch of destructo humans about us. Can we ever help ourselves and save ourselves from these things? You know what? God's a good God. Just don't get greedy. Do your work. Listen to his voice. Follow his path. Even when everything is falling down around you, it's going to be okay because he'll be with you. And he'll be with you even if you make silly decisions. But you know what? Try to make good decisions about your finances and not be driven by your flesh. And I really need to stop talking because I have things to do. So I am going now. Have a great Thanksgiving.